Welcome to the PrivCap podcast.
And now, PrivCap's Zoe Hughes.
I'm joined here today by Alfonso Monk, CIO Americas of PGIM Real Estate, and Ken Mulcasey, Senior Managing Director of GID International. Thank you both for joining me here today.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
There's a lot of headline noise when we look to investing in Latin America, you know, a regional economy in recession, falling commodity prices, struggling export demand. You've got Zika virus, political mayhem, rising inflation. It's leaving a lot of investors actually pretty scared. And I do actually wonder, though, whether the headline risks are actually distracting us from actually some genuine opportunities within commercial real estate. Now, you've both had decades of experience investing in the region. When we look to the volatility that's happening in Latin America, in these emerging markets, are you actually scared or excited?
Well, I think you have to separate the static from the signal. I tend to view the Latin America markets as a series of strong markets and a series of damaged markets. And I think a lot of the fundamentals that underlie both of those are what you have to really look to. It's a question of which factors are relevant to investment decision making and try and get in front of those flows. And I think good investors look at the flows of demographics and market cycles and try and position themselves accordingly.
I think there's a lot of noise in the markets, you said, a lot of headline news, but you have to shift through those and go beyond those to see where the opportunities are. I think there's headline news, not only in Latin America, but the way around the world. So those headline news are affecting everybody, and Latin America is not immune. But I think, first of all, you have to separate Latin America in different regions and countries. We typically lumped it almost as a single region, but if you look at countries like the two largest economies, for instance, Brazil and Mexico, they're very different from each other. They're very different from a macroeconomic and real estate cycle perspective. So I do think also that the real risks of the region are not the headline news, but the inherent risks that have been there for a while.
Ken, I know you've previously said to me that there is a real natural pilot light, you know, within these markets, you know, really a natural pilot light in terms of growth. I mean, talk to me in regard to that. Where do you actually really see the growth within Latin America? Talk to me about those fundamentals.
If you look at growth in terms of the young population, the new households, they are happening in markets like Mexico, where you have over 50% of the population that's under 35. They create 600,000 households a year. The U.S., by contrast, with over three times the population, has about 1.2 million households. Brazil, it's amazing. They're 200 million people, and they have the same household formation rate as the U.S., about 1.2 million, 1.5 million. So those, from an investor's perspective, are really opportunities to capitalize on. They said good soccer players need to be where the ball is going, not where it is. And I think that's very true in investing in Latin America. You have to be where the markets are moving, in the next 3 to 5 years rather than where it's now. And as Alfonso noted, those headlines from a foreigner's perspective are so palpable and so scary and intimidating. Whereas I think really smart money understands that there's that short-term static, but the long-term is really towards, an uplift of the middle class, an uplift of the college graduates. Mexico just had, 15% year-on-year college graduation rates in the last decade. That's phenomenal. And so that supports the industrial sector, supports the retailing, supports the residential, and it's kind of a domino effect because of the demographics. And you see that across the board. Some are just more accentuated.
Where is the game going over the next 3 to 5 years? Where are you actually focusing your activities?
Yeah, I mean, we focus on the large markets. Ken noted Mexico is probably our largest market right now. We have a very positive view on Mexico because some of the things that Ken mentioned, the household formation, the middle class, the young population, also the fact that it's a very manufacturing-driven country has become very competitive. With what's happening in China and the rise in the cost in China. So we like that story. We like industrial particularly because it's really the engine of Mexico. It's really what's driving the economy, and beyond that is making other sectors grow.
I do have to ask about Brazil because obviously that is dominating all the headlines in terms of the mayhem and the static. It just every time you think about Latin America and volatility, you obviously look to Brazil. So talk to me about how you go through that static, how you actually find those opportunities and what you're looking at.
You have to be really careful. Brazil is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's a very large country, as Ken mentioned, big population, a lot of natural resources, huge growth. But on the other hand, it's a very unstable complicated country to do business. The cost of doing business is very high just because of a lot of the reasons that you're seeing right now. Politically, it's unstable. Macroeconomically, it's volatile with respect to either inflation or interest rates or currency. I think this noise is making it more interesting because a lot of people are walking away from Brazil. It's been the darling of Latin America over the last, I would say, 7 to 8 years, and just people just gone a little bit burned with it. So it's opening a lot of opportunities in our view.
I think for the smaller investors and the smaller funds or family offices, really it's trying to take advantage of some of the dislocation. And you know, the thing that's most troubling to me is just there's been a huge disintermediation going on. You know, the savings rates are way down. There's lack of credit. The foreign investor money dried up, and that's a good thing on one level, for real estate investors. But I think for the rank and file consumers there, that's a troubling thing because their unemployment is rising, inflation is still unwieldy, the Selic rate is still very high. I'll agree with your point. The political economy is a real mess, and it's just cast a pall over the whole market. And there's not a lot of visibility there. So, the double-edged sword being, do you want to grab that falling knife right now and take that lower base at this point, or is it going to go to another level?
Because I was going to ask in terms of valuation risk, because, is the opportunity now in kind of like debt products, where you're actually building in some kind of upside? Talk to me about valuation risk. Isn't that a huge, like saying, could this go even further down?
That's the big question. I think the good moment now for Brazil, just because the lack of liquidity, is in structured debt products. I think, participating debt with kickers, and at least you're having a floor rate that if you're comfortable, your downside's protected, and it's okay to give up some upside, because that's the real bet in the gamble. When's it going to come? How much will it be? And is it ever going to be real and materialize? I mean, when we start to look at Brazil back in 08, everybody was talking IRRs in the 40s, and that quickly descended. And so I think having a structured product where you can protect your IRR, protect your whole dollar, returns, and let your partner continue to drink the Kool-Aid of the upside, that's fine with us. It's not a case where greed is good.
And Alfonso, talk to me in regards, is Brazil now a debt opportunity?
I'd rather do a 20% IRR than a 40% potential IRR. Can mention the Selic. Selic is the interest rate, the base interest rate, equivalent to the prime interest rate in the U.S. is a 13.25%. So we are lending in Brazil at 18% rates. With some kickers and some structure, given the lack of liquidity on the market. I mean, banks are not financing, nobody's providing any credit. You have developers or real estate owners that need to finish up, a fully sold product or residential product that have no capital to finish an existing building. So we come in, provide that rescue capital at 18-20% rates nominally, which we think, given that you're protecting yourself from valuation risk, given that you're going into the debt at leverage levels of, let's say, 50 to 70%, you really have a really good risk-adjusted investment, and we really like it.
But Ken did talk about, that rising unemployment, and I'm kind of looking to the fundamentals. Where is the job growth? Where's the wage growth? And if you don't have those, how does that really fuel the fundamentals of commercial real estate investment? Is that not a little bit of a concern?
It is, but you have to select the right sectors. I mean, Brazil's economy, as opposed to Mexico, is based on commodities, right, and internal consumption. Obviously, it's the largest country in Latin America, 200 million people. It has a very strong middle class that has grown over the last 10 years, and there's a lot of consumption. And then it exports commodities, which obviously commodities have come down, but there's certain sectors of the economy of Brazil that are still very competitive. For instance, exports of soy, sugar, ethanol. So all the agricultural producing regions of Brazil are still doing pretty well. I do think that you have to, again, shift through the headlines. There is more unemployment, but still a very large economy with no credit. No matter what happens, we are believers that it's still going to be a very important economy in the world. It's the sixth largest economy in the world.
And those are all good points, because it's in this transition moment. And, a friend of mine down there likes to say, Brazil's not dead, it just smells funny, and on a lot of levels. But all kidding aside, it's a transitioning from a consumer-oriented society where that was 80% of the GDP to hopefully a more investment-oriented. That's what they really have to get right.
Alfonso, as we look to 2016 and we look to the region, is this the year that Latin America really kind of comes into its own?
Fortunately, probably not. I think one of the unfortunate things about Latin America is it was the eternal promise. People think is the Mexico day, is the Mexico moment, is the Brazil moment, and I think it's not going to happen in 2016. What I do see in 2016, given the volatility, is some people have walked out of the market because of the headline risk that you've mentioned, and the volatility and the concerns about Brazil. People been walking away from Brazil for the last year and a half or 2 years. So I do think for those who shift through those headlines, there'll be very good opportunities to invest. I think the capital has dried up in a lot of parts of the region, including Mexico. The capital markets have dried up a little bit. So I do think for those who have a long-term view of the region, such as PGIM Real Estate, we will find much interesting opportunities. But I don't think it's going to be the year of Latin America.
I'm going to veer off of agreement for a moment and say that I think it's a year of selective investment. I don't think there's going to be net investors as much as there'll be net lenders, because I do really think the debt side needs to be active, and there's just liquidity crunches everywhere you see, particularly in Brazil. It also matters what your investment timeline and horizon is. If there's investment fund managers that have a 7-year, fund life, I think you might be a little stressed. But if you have a longer view, I think you'll do well, because getting in now at a low basis in some of these markets, and I think certain asset classes, it's all about a basis play, like in housing, for rental housing or for retail or for logistics. Land's not going to get any cheaper in these markets, so I think there is upside there, but again, you have to be very cautious overall.